Okay, well, thank you all for joining us on the call. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and it's about 9 o'clock Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, a few minutes past. And we are here in balmy Florida. We've been making our way across the United States over the last few weeks, and we've left, I guess it was about 5 weeks ago now, and we had our third Thursday November meeting when we were in icy Flagstaff. Boy, it was so cold. We had ice all and snow all around us there. And now, a month later, we are in Eola, Florida, which is where my mother lives, in a community here of retired missionaries. And it's really amazingly warm. We're kind of like, kind of keep cool here with all the windows open and minimal clothing. So that's how it is where we are. And I want to thank all of you for joining us on the call. So we're going to be jumping in. We have some kind of interesting things to talk about, I think, especially interesting things to talk about. And of course, always are welcome to speak with you and hear your ideas and any questions or comments or concerns or joys or sorrows or whatever you may have. This is a great time to share them. Press *6 on your phone and you can do that. So we're going to be having Madeline say a few words here in a minute. I'd like to, as usual, just start out with a short little few minutes of just taking a moment and just gathering our energy together and feeling our connection with each other, and know that we're connected through the aspiration that lives in our hearts for peace and harmony and compassion and kindness and awakening to a more conscious way of living in our world, in our lives as beings of spirit, of awareness, of love, and growing in understanding. So we give thanks for this connection that we have with each other and with everyone who's in this movement. I really think this movement is vast, probably far vaster than we can even imagine. It's the essential movement of consciousness evolving and awakening to the truth of the interconnectedness of all life. So I think this movement is, we call it the vegan movement, but it's far older and more ancient and more deep than we're probably aware of. So we give thanks to all the great teachers who have gone before us, both men and women, and I'm sure non-human animals as well have taught us a lot, and ecosystems and trees and spirit beings of many kinds. And we give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have together this evening to open our hearts and minds to a deeper understanding of the possibilities and the also the issues that we're facing. And we give thanks also knowing that our being together here is an aspect and a manifestation of our, not only our personal journeys for awakening to be more effective advocates for peace and justice and freedom, but also to embody these qualities in our, in the minutiae of our daily lives, which I think is really so important. And we give thanks knowing that all the ripples that radiate out into the world from our being together here this evening are ripples that bring peace and healing to every dimension of our life and for all beings of the past, present, and future. We give thanks knowing that we're part of an awakening of human consciousness on this beautiful planet. And we give thanks also knowing that we are gifted, probably beyond what we are aware of, with talents and abilities that can help us to contribute to this movement. And in many ways, I think the animals are our teachers in the sense that they can help us get beyond the usual limitations that we set on ourselves in order to bring our capacities to bless the world. So thank you all for joining us, and we will now go ahead and move into the main part of our call. It's circles. It's called the World Peace Diet Circle, and this is basically people who are going through the World Peace Diet Mastery Program, Facilitator Training Program, or who are registered in the World Peace Diet Circle. And it's a safe place for us to go more deeply into what, to me, in many ways are, I think, the deeper teachings of veganism that go beyond the usual, just eat a certain way and wear certain things a certain way and pass out flyers and try to get people to change, but to really wrestle with, if we can, the many different dimensions of what going vegan actually is all about in our society today, and how we can understand at a deeper level how to fulfill our destiny on this earth as advocates of positive social change, and also as beings who are evolving in the short and precious time that we have here on this earth. So again, please press *6 if you want to say something. That will raise a little flag for us here in the studio, so-called studio, which is our rolling home, parked in the driveway, actually, of our mother's car here. And I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Madeline. Okay, just a second here. I'm getting 1 second. So Mark Stroud is calling in. Just a second. I'm not sure if I need to take that or... we also wanted to have Mark Stroud talk to us here this evening, and so let me see. Okay, well, I know Mark is saying something, but I can't tell what it is. So I guess what we'll do is I'll go ahead and introduce Madeline. And then she'll take it away for a few minutes, and we'll, and again, like I say, press *6 if you have any comments or questions. So, Madeline is, as you all are probably aware, my beloved and precious spouse. We've been together now for, how long is it?
23.
23 years of bliss, of connubial bliss. Well, not always bliss, but mostly. So we've been able to go through quite a few ups and downs along the path of being vegans in a not-yet-vegan world, and Madeline has some ideas and thoughts she would like to share, and so we're going to go ahead and I'm going to unmute her phone here as soon as I can find it. What's your phone number? Weird. Okay, so. Okay, so I found her phone number, and so now we're going. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, everybody. It's so great to be on the call tonight, and I have a few ideas. Will just mentioned deep veganism, and it really doesn't stop with the food and with wearing the right clothes. But also, I think as vegans, we feel like still we have some entitlement to just consume anything what's vegan as much as one likes, and if it's vegan, that's okay, and all that. And I think this isn't really veganism, because veganism is to take care of the earth, to take care of all her inhabitants and all that, to really be frugal, be live a simple life, and read labels, and not eating like anything which is just vegan, but looking what's in there. It's so many companies involved, so much energy and all that, and we could live much simpler and much more natural with eating basic foods, whole foods, and like using solar and wind, like, for example, we could cook with, we're not doing it yet, but I'm looking really deeply into cooking with a solar power, with a solar oven. I mean, our house is totally on solar, and that's also why one is more aware how much energy different things use, like the dryer uses like enormous energy, ovens use energy, heaters and all kinds of things. So one is more aware of it, but then a solar oven is really a great thing too. Then using sun and wind for laundry. Why not hanging laundry? And kind of putting that kind of, it's too much, it's too complicated, it's all these sentences we have ready to say, I don't have time and all that. But just putting all this aside and looking a little more deeply how natural life could be. And we get so much more happy if we're living naturally, seeing how birds live, how other animals live, how the blue sky, the clouds travel over, and all that. And we can still do our work very nicely. And then the natural living is more relaxing than doing the consumerism, this enormous consumerism, and just feeling after me the deluge. It doesn't matter. The older we get, the more thinking like this, it doesn't matter anymore, I'm going soon, and all these kind of things. I just realize sometimes even conscious people don't read labels. So now raise your hand, everybody who reads labels. It's like, really, it's so important in any kind. There is so much mixed in, or where it's coming from. What does it take to actually use these things? And the slave labor, all these slaves having to work for us and under conditions which are terrible. I mean, deep veganism is really thinking about all these things. And there are very good old ideas, like, for example, a hot water bottle instead of turning on heaters right away, or even, I said this already once, especially for women who like to have a wonderful skin, and they turn the heater on and get their skin gets older very much faster with that unnatural air that dehydrating and the chemicals from the heater and everything. So one can look back into the past. What did they use? What did they do? Why not having an exercise ball and bouncing a little bit if it gets cold, jump rope and taking a walk or something, whatever the time allows, just doing some other solutions for getting, you know, so one can live more comfortably, but not on the cost of others, because there are so many people who don't have all that, and it's good to feel into to use less, so other people have something too. And also, if you be more natural, the energy of that way of life spreads over the world, and it's not everything just physical, it's fine physical. The energy of being caring, of being simple, of being loving, of all these wonderful traits one can have and practice, and practice meditation, practice spiritual reading studies, and then practicing all this in life and all that. That's a whole big circle of beautiful activities of deep veganism. And I mean, I could go on and on, but I think I'm kind of slowly liking to wrap up. So Mark has very interesting things to say, which I'd really like to give him some space in. But I will talk another time too, again. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Madeline. I guess what you said is pretty self-explanatory, and I won't say anything probably more about it, except that I think it's really important, actually, what you're saying, in the sense that as vegans, we've seen this a lot. For example, and not to be critical, but just to be aware, we're all born into a society where we're forced to participate in all kinds of rituals that sort of disconnect us from the natural rhythms and I think sensibilities that we would have. And I remember living in the Zen monastery, for example, and Zen centers in general, the whole idea of not wasting anything, of not wasting food, not throwing things away, not wasting water, for example, how precious water is. I mean, we know it's precious, but on the other hand, we got these modern systems in place. We can send millions of gallons here and there and everywhere and take it out from under the ground and throw it back there. And we kind of think as a society at a very deep level, this is sort of preconscious that we're superior to nature, that we're managing everything. And I think in many ways veganism is a deep questioning of all of this, not just when it comes to not buying meat and dairy products, but to really, you look at how we're using products. Like, we go to quite a few potlucks as part of giving lectures, night after night after night, and sharing meals with people. And, again, it's not a criticism, but I'm appalled, actually, to see people, just take food. It all looks delicious, and then their eyes are bigger than their stomach. And so they just throw the food away. I couldn't eat that. I'll throw it away. And, for me, of course, I spent time when I was younger with traveling with no money and any food at all. I realized was really precious because I didn't know where the next meal was coming from. But I think on a deep level, like what Madeline's saying, is that if you're growing your own food in a garden, and that's it, you're dependent on your garden, and you have this sense of, putting energy out and watering and loving, then the idea of actually, preparing some food and then just throwing it away. I mean, it'd be one thing if there's parts of it that you can compost, and use it again. But one of the things that really, I guess, is extremely disturbing is the fact that we're throwing away, just in the United States alone, something like 30% of all the meat and dairy that's actually produced is thrown in the trash. I mean, these are animals that give their lives, and 3 out of every 10 are just thrown in the garbage, without people don't even eat it. And so that's, to me, utterly unconscionable. It's bad enough to pay, someone to stab or kill or rape an animal and then eat their flesh, but then just to not even do it, just throw it in the trash. But we do the same thing, with beautiful grains and vegetables and fruits, or we use energy or things, without really sometimes, I think, being aware. And there's this old saying, I think, Madeline's heard me say it before, and sometimes she doesn't like to hear it, but it's a saying from the Zen tradition, in the winter, I shiver.
Summarize sweat.
Right.
No, I think that's good. But I like also to say that what you just said about fruit and vegetables, if it's not organic, it's labor which we take for granted.
Very often, yeah.
Like, really terrible. And that's also why I really urge to go organic and whole foods.
Right. And, of course, even better is veganic.
Yeah.
And that's usually we have to grow it ourselves or know local people because it's hard to find veganic foods just in the grocery store. But it is coming. We're seeing more and more of that. But, again, it's a wonderful opportunity I think we all have to grow sprouts on our counters and grow tomatoes and other things and porches if we have them or having a little land somewhere to grow some food is a really wonderful thing because I think what we're seeing probably more and more is a move in our society away from the viability of massive systems based on corruption, violence, and toxicity and it's just getting so extreme. And so the wave of the future, I think, really is toward a radical shift towards individual and communal cooperative living where we're very aware of inputs, you know, what we're putting in, our energy, land, water, and seeds and so forth, and seeing the preciousness of everything. And I think the sooner we start living that way, even while we're still maybe connected to the grid or whatever, you know, but still to as best we can to honor this whole sacredness of life here, the more in touch we feel, I think, with everything. And then also just to remember that we're living, even the kings, I mean, the most powerful people just a couple hundred years ago had nowhere near the kind of luxuries we have. The average person in the United States has today in terms of being able to just turn on hot water and take a shower whenever we want. I mean, that was absolutely unheard of, really, until just, you know, to get a feeling for how these beautifully subtle and evolved societies have emerged with very deep and beautiful arts and philosophies and music and so forth, and they didn't have the kind of comfort, you know, this comfort that we have. And I think that comfort can really be an impediment to we get kind of addicted to these comforts, and that can be a real impediment to our progress. So
creativity.
Creativity too.
Yeah.
Right. So that's anyway. That's just some seeds for thought. Again, we're not in any way criticizing anyone, but just to realize that we are raising a society at a very deep, powerful, and I think toxic level of entitlement and comfort. That's the goal of life. If the goal of life is to consume so much that you're always comfortable, you have enough money that you never feel any temperature other than the one you just exactly want, that we're entitled to have what we want, we're entitled to communicate speed of light and to have every music and every experience, you know, that this is what technology brings us. And I think what we're seeing is that technology has this dark side where the more we get that, the more controlled we are in many ways, the more our movements are tracked and our free speech is destroyed and our capacities are limited. So I think the awareness of being vigorous, of being self-sufficient, of being sufficient unto ourselves in our own consciousness, that we don't need something from outside of ourselves, that we're living really for one reason only, and that is to bless others, to give, care for, to protect, to bless, and the sense of we're living in a world where there's so many people and animals are suffering, and to do the best we can to be a force for reducing that suffering, and thinking of others rather than who have so much less than us, rather than just our own needs. And the irony in all of that, actually, again, I think maybe I've said this to you before, is that I think what we will discover is that we find greater joy emerging as we're in sort of strange ways. We just have this sense of being satisfied and happy with what we're doing and who we are because we're not feeding those flames of dissatisfaction that we want to have this or need to have that. And, of course, we always pay a price for those things more than we realize. I was born and raised in Concord, Massachusetts, and I guess maybe I have this Emersonian kind of philosophy and feeling. He said things are in the saddle and ride mankind. You know that. And he said that back in the 1830s. Think of that. That was almost 200 years ago when we didn't. He would be probably appalled at the way people are walking around with iPads, looking down all the time at their lives on this little tiny thing. And we're, you know, I mean, things are in the saddle and ride mankind. This is really, I think, veganism is to me in many ways a call and a challenge to really emerge out of a sleepy state of being dependent on what the corporate culture can provide us as some kind of a means in itself. So even though right now I know we're probably all using phones, and I mean we are all using phones and computers, but hopefully to also take time every day to disconnect from all that stuff, you know, a little bit anyway, and take time to make music or to move or to garden or to communicate with people verbally and get out of just the human-made world, connect with nature and reestablish ourselves as human beings living on a beautiful planet outside of this world of that seems to be so real, you know, this world of the media. And the other thing is to just really be aware of how much the media is distorting our perception of reality. One of the greatest gifts I think I've had is just to not have a TV for the last 45 years. And by avoiding that, I know I freed up a lot of time for myself that maybe would have been gone down watching television, but to free ourselves, because I think there's an enormous amount of, just subconscious messaging and other things that are going on with the mass media. A lot of it is untruthful, but a lot of it is also disempowering. And I just love the fact that in the vegan movement, in many ways, what we're doing is we're making our own news, right? We're making our own news. We're creating our own books and magazines and products. And they're based on an entirely different mentality and framework, based on abundance, based on sharing, based on caring, based on justice and freedom and sustainability and peace and kindness and creativity and really the sense that we're only on this planet for a short, precious, beautiful splash of dancing creativity. So for the time we're here to let ourselves be used by the infinite love that is really, I think, the source of all life, and contribute somehow. And I know if you're on this call, you're already, all of us, I think, in our own ways are figuring out how to do that. That's the great challenge. But it's, it's just, for us, it's been so touching over the last month since we last saw you. Or spoke to you, I guess just to say, I see you in my mind's eye here, to be able to, almost every single night, you know, to be able to talk about veganism in all kinds of places, sometimes in yoga studios or in art galleries or in churches or in libraries, community centers, restaurants. We've been, all over the place. And to see just really beautiful people who are working in powerful ways to help spread this message. And then as part of that, we have been able to stay a little bit in state parks. And we just a few days ago, we were connecting with manatees in Manatee Springs State Park. I mean, not connecting with them, not actually touching them, but kind of just swimming and paddling around with them and things like that, and owls and birds of various kinds and other animals, deer. We've seen a lot of deer lately. So just to remember that these animals are here and they are celebrating their lives, and there's a magnificent capacity that animals have. And it's just very refreshing to take time and watch. I mean, I was watching just the other day, 2 days ago, I think we were at a campground before we left. I spent a good 15 minutes, I think, watching squirrels. I mean, squirrels, just looking at squirrels. I mean, they are astonishing what they can do. I watched these squirrels literally running up trees like 150 feet in the air, straight up. and then jumping from tree to tree to tree in these very delicate, tiny branches weighing 150 feet off the ground with absolute grace and elegance and no fear. I mean, and they never fall. You don't see a squirrel just suddenly plop on the ground, you know. I mean, and then they leap and then they scurry down again, running straight down the trunks, then out on the limbs and then jumping over and then chattering and then chasing each other and then running around. I mean, they're just running around. They're the amazing ability of these animals. And every animal has these capacities. I mean, then we watch the woodpeckers, how they just hammering away and just, you know, just incredible what they can do, how they just know where to go. And they're all living. They're all making a living. They're all contributing. And their contribution together is this enormous celebration. I mean, we can't even imagine what's going on with these different beings and looking through their eyes and getting a sense of the whole thing. But there's this underlying sense I think we have when we look at this whole unfoldment of how precious and beautiful it is, and it's a reflection of a greater benevolence and energy and creativity that is really the same thing that lives in our hearts that we can be using to create communities of joy and freedom ourselves. And so we're seeing glimpses of that. It's great to see, you know, like when we come into a town like Birmingham, Alabama or whatever, and people have gathered together to talk about these ideas, and everybody brings vegan food and we share the food together and we talk about the possibility of living our lives in a whole different way on this earth. And we're still such a tiny minority, but the beauty of it is, I think, is that we have the same vision, and we know that by questioning the underlying narrative of our society, we're actually creating a whole new narrative, basically, one based on a much more solid foundation of reality, which is actually ancient. I think that's a lot of the beauty of it too. So I'd like to kind of wrap up that part of our little talk together. Thank you, Madeline, so much for sharing those ideas. I really never know what she's going to say, but I think it was really interesting, just to bring that up. And I'd like to, I know Mark Stroud is, we talked earlier today, and he was, as you know, Mark is a longtime vegan, one of the longest time vegans, I think, there are, you know, in the movement, probably over 40 years now. And is a chef and lives in Cincinnati and has helped contribute enormously to the vegan movement, and not only in Cincinnati, but I think in many ways it just keeps, you know, new things keep coming. And so, Mark, I want to welcome you to our call, and if you would like to say a few words about what's new with you, that would be awesome if you can do that.
Sure. Hello, Will. And it's so... it's always so wonderful to be on these epic calls. Ecstatic to be here. Thank you. Yeah. Just to carry on the theme of deep veganism or deep empathy and compassion, some of those synonyms for veganism. And we're on this journey, as many know, of publishing the World Peace Diet Cookbook and the World Peace Yoga Book. And as a result of that, we had to go into a steep learning curve to really understand the depth of the publishing industry. And, of course, we're always practicing our yogic principles, and particularly one of my favorites, which is what we consider one of the 16 tenets of practicing the yoga spiritual path. It's the Sanskrit Svadhyaya, which is self-study. And so we're always looking at everything that we think, say, and do. And, of course, one of the things that we're doing is publishing a couple of books. So, of course, we like them to be eco-friendly, but as we looked into the publishing world, we found out that most books are actually eco-warring, and there's a war going on against starting with the authors, of going on with the cutting down the trees and chemicals that are used in the process of the paper, and the inks are toxic, and the glue, oh my gosh, the glue for most books is derived from animals. So I think if we look at the libraries in most vegans' household, they've got non-vegan books, like they've got a hamburger sitting on the shelf there. to bind all these books together. So it's just been a really great journey and a real eye-opener to go against that, go against the grain of what has been the tradition. It's been just devastating in so many different ways. Authors, for instance, typically receive maybe 8% to 15% of the reward from their own work. The bigger share goes to the publishing company, and in this day and age, it's not even to the publishing company, it's to Amazon, and they've pretty much taken over the publishing world. So there's just so many different aspects of this that have come to light, and it just fits in what Natalie was talking about and what you were talking about. There's just this never-ending story of looking at all the things that we're involved in and taking responsibility for ourselves and others around us, the world, to know that all the things that we say, do, think are an extension of ourselves, and to take responsibility for that and to take a stand and to study those things and to go deeper and to know that we're, first of all, sometimes it can seem very daunting. And that's why I really appreciate these calls, because then we know that we're all in this together, and not just everybody on this call, but everybody on the planet. We're all in this together, and it's in our DNA, it's in our heart of hearts for things to be different. So as we become aware of these things, then it's an opportunity to become inspired, engaged, be in community, be in satsang, and work together and collaborate in ways that we never, ever imagined before, and to really reach out to each other and sometimes set aside our own agendas and especially our unhealthy parts of our ego to collaborate and have so much more exponential power in working together. I have to say that's what I believe is the hallmark of my relationship with you and Madeline and Anna and the people in the community on this phone, is that we have set those differences and those sometimes misunderstandings, or even sometimes our understandings we have to set aside. It's like they say in unity, you know, usually people come to a spiritual place or to a church or to have their they want to get all of their questions answered, but I think we sometimes have to just question our answers, and I think that's what we've done, is sometimes we're questioning what we're doing so that we can do more of what's all for one and one for all, so that we can really have a more catalyst and more synergy to be more powerful, and as we do that, then these old traditions and these old structures start to fall away. The fact that, you know, we're seeing McDonald's is actually losing market share, and the restaurants are closing down, and Monsanto is being banned in countries all over the world, and the people eating other beings has dropped precipitously, and so many animals are alive as a result of that. And so we're clearly saying that as we make these changes and we take this energy and we look deeply into ourselves and the choices that we make, that we really are making a difference in our own selves and loving ourselves more and consequently being able to love each other, loving all other beings on the planet. So it's a real inspiration, and it leaves me with ecstatic bliss.
Good. Well, that's, yeah, right. I understand. I think I understand what you're saying, and Yeah, that's it. You know, I mean, we have a precious opportunity of a human life, and to not just let it kind of go slide by without actually living. Remember that great movie Carpe Diem with Robin Williams?
Oh, yeah. You know, Seize the day.
You know, that sense of doing something with our precious life that actually does contribute to the betterment of the world and gives us the chance to really reach out and connect and be challenged and learn and grow and connect with each other and, you know, all those kinds of things. So that's, I think, where the real, like you say, ecstatic bliss, the real joy, the irony is that so many of us, I can see that in myself, there's this sense of not wanting to get out of what I'm used to and just kind of live in a certain way because that's what I think is a way I'm supposed to live. And if I can just, you know, take care of myself, then I'll be happy. And the irony is that that's really a prescription for unhappiness.
Yeah.
For those who learn to just somehow live their lives to bless others, find the greatest joy. And that's really the vegan idea is that, you know, if you let animals live and let them live their joy, and boy, just going out into nature, you can see what a huge beauty that they give us, and to celebrate that and to let them just stop stealing it from them. And then, of course, we have to live that, you know, with ourselves as well. And to see that, like when you're publishing a book on vegan living, like you're publishing two books, one on a vegan cookbook and one on vegan yoga, the World Peace Diet cookbook. And you really have this vegan message, and you want to have the publishing world be used in a way that is in alignment with that. But what you're saying is it's really difficult, but you don't want to just only do an ebook, right? You want to have something so that's actually tangible. So you just do the best. I think we just, you know, in many ways, you have to do the best we can in those situations, obviously.
Yeah, I think it's the best we can, and always looking to increase and do better.
Right, improve it. Yeah, widen the envelope more, right.
Yes, yeah, and it's within our ability to do that. And I, on a personal note, I'll say thank you to everyone that participated in our Indiegogo campaign for the books, and to know that we're diligently working and that it's our intention to deliver the books with the least amount of imprint on the planet, and to make sure that it is the book itself will speak for itself in terms of eco-friendly,
right,
vegan, deep empathy and compassion for all sort of way. And I think that's the standard that when we say that that's our standard and we're always looking at, obviously we're not able to do all those things all the time, but it's important that we're always looking at it and looking at how we're able to do it as much as possible and keep improving and keep growing. So
great. Right. That's quite fantastic, I think, really, you know, and just keep persistently listening within our own hearts for what is called from us for today, you know, what it is that we're to do today, and never think that whatever we do is less than whatever anybody else does, you know, because I think that's a trap that's easy to kind of fall into, to compare ourselves with others and to think, well, I'm not doing as much as they're doing, or they're not doing as much as I'm doing, or whatever. Just forget all that. I remember when I was living in this Tibetan Buddhist center in San Francisco way back when I was only like 21 years old or something, and there was this a very high lama who was coming from Tibet to give an initiation, and I can't remember the exact details, but I had another obligation. And I was going to be away, and I was going to miss it. And to me, this was a big thing. You know, this was a big opportunity that I was going to miss. And I remember the Lama, the local Lama in San Francisco, he was also from Tibet, called me in, and we had this talk. And his English wasn't that good, but he said, "Who knows what is big is big." I just always think of that. Who knows what is big is big? You know, how do you know what you think is big is really big? Or how do you know what you think is small is really small? you know, maybe it's you know, more in the big picture, who knows? I mean, the whole idea is to find the unique contribution that each one of us has to make, and it's perfect. It's what we have. It may, the world may think it's big or not. You know, it's easy to sell a lot of books, you know, and make, I mean, I shouldn't say it's easy, but I mean, it's definitely possible to sell a lot of books and be, make a big impact. The message that's probably, you know, pretty toxic. And at the same point, we can, work hard and make some kind of, impression perhaps by writing or speaking or whatever it is we're doing, sharing with people. And it may seem relatively small, but, we have to remember, I think Lily and I were talking about this, so, you know, Henry David Thoreau, he wrote Walden. I mean, even before he died, you know, that book, he wrote about how he published, I think 1,000 of them, and like 900 of them are still sitting in his garage or whatever, you know, they never went anywhere. And yet that book has become probably the number one bestseller of all American authors' books is, you know, Henry David Thoreau's Walden. So, again, it's just the idea is to just be true to ourselves and our own unique vision and put it out there, without, compromising the essence of our message. I think as we do that, we'll automatically touch other people in a way that is authentic. And that's it. I think it's that authenticity that is so beautiful. And that's what I love about what you're talking about, Mark, with doing these books. You want it to be as authentically vegan as possible. That's one of the things I love about, you know, Lantern Books. I mean, all the books are, and vegan publishers too, they're all, you know, printed on 100% post-consumer recycled paper and using inks that are not, you know, processed chlorine-free and soy-based inks and all that kind of stuff. So to at least, you know, do it, and that's very unusual in the publishing world. So we do have the situation where we have massive corporations that bestride us in many ways. But again, there's ways that we can get around being dominated by them and do the best we can to connect or to use the, whatever they perhaps have to offer in ways that hopefully can serve the larger good. So thanks again, Mark. Is there any last thing you want to add, or we should probably move along here?
Yeah, no, I'm glad that we're having this conversation. I think it's so important in this time and for others to continue to be there for each other and to continue these conversations and watch as things change.
Right. Great. Okay. Well, thanks, Mark. We'll look forward to hearing more about the progress of these wonderful books, the World Peace Yoga book and the World Peace Diet Cookbook. And just keep up, you know, the terrific work you're doing. It's great to talk to you.
Yeah, great to talk with you. Thank you and Madeline for all that you do.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
So, yeah, you know, there's really quite a bit of other stuff I'd like to share about. Madeline and I are now about a little over a month living in our rolling home. And it's, you know, after actually being in for about 3 years in the house, it's very interesting to live in a small space of about 200 square feet and realize, again, that we really don't need very much in terms of things, and we can be happy in a small, tiny little space, and have the opportunity to learn from people as we travel. So I'd like to just reiterate, if anyone has any questions or comments about anything we've been saying, please press *6. And what I'd like to talk about right now is just sort of what's happened since the last call and what we see coming up here and what's been going on the last month in terms of the news in the vegan world. There's really quite a lot happening. I mean, there's just, I think, a lot of progress we can really see is happening. And so I'll draw your attention. I'm glad I have a chance to do this a little earlier in the call. Sometimes it's not till the very end. To the December 2015 resources for the World Peace Diet Circle. There's some videos that have been recorded of me addressing various issues. The origins of human oppression is one of them. The spiritual teaching of the Golden Rule is another one. The connection between food choices and social justice is another one. And these are all short videos, just a few minutes or 7 minutes long, something like that. So we have those up. They were created when we were in Portland, Oregon recently. And there's also a couple other articles, the Yoga and Nonviolent Living article, which really looks more deeply into ahimsa and yoga and a connection with veganism, published in the Hawaiian newspaper there. And also another interview, it's been a few interviews actually on summits, the Food Body Spirit Connection was an online summit, and there was also the a vegan summit that I spoke on recently as well. I can't see the link here, but anyway, there's been a lot of internet activity around veganism this last month with these summits and talking about the connection between food choices, spirituality, environmental justice, animals, and consciousness. And it's just great to see that this is getting wider play. That Food Body Spirit especially was not strictly a vegan. It was more widespread. So I kind of brought the vegan perspective to that. I also wanted to draw our attention to what Sandra Higgins has been doing. She's one of our Brookside facilitators in Ireland. And she has organized, if you've seen, it's very inspiring. Really just jumping right ahead into the thick of things in Ireland with this vegan billboard campaign. I mean, I really would like to get Sandra on one of our calls. The problem is, of course, it's about 2-3 in the morning there or whatever right now, but she's just a beautiful force for vegan living. She's created, and she went through the World Peace Diet training. She was really very, had a lot of questions and concerns about psychology. She's a psychotherapist herself about, you know, how we can, as activists, how we can be effective and how we can also avoid burnout and so forth. She decided to start her own animal sanctuary, and she's done it. I mean, she's got an animal sanctuary in Ireland. She's got cows and pigs, or she's got animals that she's taking care of, and she's doing a lot of it on her own. She has hardly anybody helping her. It's amazing. She's got a few people, I guess, but it's mostly a one-person operation. And then on top of that, she's these clients. And then on top of that, I don't know how she does it. She's got this vegan billboard campaign with billboards. I've seen these pictures. I mean, billboards all, up on highways in Ireland, on buses, on trains, I mean, all over the place, these billboards. And they're very, very, animal liberation oriented. They're not kind of like the Mercy for Animal. I mean, Mercy for Animal ones are good. They show a pig and a dog and say, why pet one and eat the other, go vegetarian, and those really say very nicely, go vegan. and really raise the question of of how baby calves are stolen from their mothers and baby chicks are ground up alive and so forth. And she's got these on billboards, but really large, very professionally done. I mean, it's really professionally done. And at the same time, on top of that, then, of course, she's doing radio interviews with people and debates. I mean, I've listened to a few of her debates over the past month with farmers. I mean, these people, it's amazing the way she's able to respond to people. I mean, it's not amazing, but it's refreshing to see someone really address all the concerns that people have. I highly recommend listening to some of her interviews if you have a chance. They're excellent. I have the links here. There's debates that with cattle industry representatives. I mean, she really makes them look idiotic. They can't really defend it. I mean, she's a vegan and she doesn't need, they say, well, it provides part of a healthy diet and we've been doing it a long time and it's really, what are we going to do with the cows if we don't eat them? And she really just, in a very loving but firm way, shows them that what they're saying is absolutely outdated, outmoded. And of course, then people call in and they think she's a nut, and this lady's a lunatic. With her Irish brogue, and then she, but then other callers, of course, call in. But the whole idea is to, in a respectful and persistent way, to bring these messages before the public and help people to just simply address these things in their own lives. And as conversations increase and build, and people begin to realize that we don't need the animal foods to be healthy, then we can we'll see that people naturally begin to move in the direction of greater compassion. Like Mark said, our natural tendency is to be kind and compassionate. So that was very interesting. And then the next one I have on there, Kip Anderson speaking to the European Parliament on the Cowspiracy video. Actually, Kip Anderson speaks, also Richard Offenlander speaks, and also this fascinating fellow, I'm trying to remember his name. He's from India. Anyway, Silesh Rao. Silesh Rao is a wonderful person. I edited his essay in the Circles of Compassion book, the new book. But he's from India, and he's also goes. So the three of them go. They had a showing of Cowspiracy at the European Parliament as part of the Paris Climate Summit. And talking, three of them, really, Kip gave a great talk, Richard Offenlander gave an amazing, excellent presentation. And then also Silesh Rao, he's a scientist and really does a great job explaining not only the environmental consequences of animal agriculture, which Offenlander does too, but also goes into ahimsa and compassion and morality and ethics very, very well. So, I really highly recommend that you have a chance to look at that video and see how legislators are getting exposed to these ideas. And it's really, I think, important to understand that we're undercutting a lot of the delusions that are going on. I mean, there's this massive delusion and cover-up by the mass media of what's happening on this planet to the environment and to climate and everything else. But the good news is that there are also people making these conversations that are not recorded in the media, but it is getting out there. So that's it, I think, very important. So many thanks to Kip Anderson. As you know, Kip is a World Peace Act Facilitator, also the creator of Cowspiracy, and it's just fabulous to see the progress that's being made with getting that message out to so many more people. We also have Lorena Mukke. She was on our call last month, and her Ethical Choices program is just going great guns. She just got a large contribution. There's now openings for a lot more people to be trained, to go into schools. The money is coming in, a matching grant. We're in the middle of the beginning stages of a large matching grant opportunity, and so just huge congratulations to Lorena and everyone who's working on the Ethical Choices program to bring the vegan message to high schools nationwide. Now, this is a powerful program. It brings the message to high school students who are in many ways really primed to hear this, and it's great to see the way that Lorena, you could tell by her talking, I think, last month, how well organized she is, how articulate she is, how hardworking and good-hearted, and she's an amazing advocate for animals. So it's just a thrill to see all the positive things happening with the Ethical Choices program. And so those are some main things. A couple other movements that I thought were important to be aware of. Right after that, we have Sandra Higgins again, and she's got a great article in Vegan Sustainability Magazine, which is an Irish vegan magazine. And then this restaurant in London, just to be aware of this, this is an important thing to mention to people, I think, if you have a chance. You know, this is a well-known London high-end restaurant called Indigo, where the chef cut out dairy and didn't tell anybody for quite a few months. And then no one complained. No one even noticed, actually. And people could comment. He got more compliments than ever on his mousse and all the different things. And so this shows, I think, something very important, that we're at the point now technologically, and Mark and I were talking about this earlier. I thought we might talk about it, but he was saying how there's this new egg replacement that's made by a company, a company that did research with algae to to create oil from algae for probably a certain algae that really create oils. And so so that somehow didn't get the government subsidies for oil for using for cars and things. But as a side benefit, they found that these algae make oil, make certain lipids and also certain proteins in such a way that it just creates this extremely efficient and effective replacement for eggs. And so Follow Your Heart apparently has got the patent on this, I guess is what it is. And they've introduced this vegan scrambled egg alternative, which, according to Mark, he was telling me it's only been released in a few stores nationwide. I can't remember what he said, half a dozen or so, I think. And one of them is the store in Cincinnati, Park and Vine, which we know the people who run that store. And according to Mark, he was saying how when they get a shipment of this vegan scrambled egg that comes into their store, 12 cases, within 1 week, it's all sold out. It's the most popular product they've ever had. And the point I'm making here is that the technology, anyway, is at the point now where the vegan cheeses and egg and dairy and ice cream and burgers and all that other stuff is becoming so good, so sophisticated that we could be serving entirely vegan food to everybody and no one would even notice. This idea that no one will ever notice is crucial, because not only can we say that eating animal foods is not necessary, and people say, well, yeah, it's not necessary, but it doesn't taste good. But we can say, you wouldn't even notice it. And there's been more and more videos of people in restaurants veganizing their restaurant menus and people going in and saying, gosh, it's delicious. And so I think it's very important to understand these points as well, that vegan food is not in any way static. It's dynamic. It's changing. It's evolving. I mean, we've got tens of thousands of actual plant foods. I mean, that are vegan foods, and it's just exploding. I mean, the possibilities are just beginning to explode. But they're with these new food companies, these vegan food companies, there's really the two fastest growing food categories are vegan foods and organic foods, and so this is where consumers are headed, and the tendency is headed. The other thing is right after that is this movement in China that I really wanted to emphasize, which is the Rainflower Hut movement. I'm not sure if you've heard of this Rainflower Hut movement in China, but it's really heart-touching. I mean, it brought me to tears actually reading about how beautiful this is, and it's just booming. And again, this is one of those things. It's kind of like that old saying. In fact, I have it in January's resources. You'll see a link to this, but there's this old saying in China. It's a story, actually, about the old Chinese farmer who loses his horse, and the whole idea is you never know if something is good or bad or whatever. But the story, he loses a horse, and his neighbors come and they say, "Oh, that's terrible and too bad." And then he says, "Oh, maybe, maybe not." And then a little later, the horse comes back with like five or six wild horses, so then the neighbors say, "Oh, you're so lucky. Now you, instead of having no horses, now you've got five or six horses." And then he always answers, "Maybe, maybe not," because that's the whole idea. You don't know if something that happens is really good or not, because sometimes something seems to be not a good thing, and then sure enough, it turns out to be a great thing. And the other way also. And, so that's how the story goes. It kind of goes on and on about them. The son breaks his leg, trying to tame one of the horses, and so they say, "Oh, that's too bad." And he says, "Oh, maybe not." And then, then he avoids the draft because his leg is broken. So that's a good thing. Maybe, maybe not. And we had the other day. We went to go swimming. Yesterday, actually, was, and we can't swim right here at the lake where my mother was living because the lake is really high. So we had to ride our bikes pretty far, and we found a place. A nice little, kind of a not that good of a beach, but it's the only beach we could really use. And So we used it one day. We went back the next day yesterday, and the guy that was the owner came out and he said, no, you can't use it. And so it looked like a bad thing, like we went all that way. We couldn't use the beach. And but then he said, but there is another beach, you know, if you go a little farther down. And so he told us about that. So we went a little farther down, and it was like 10 times better. It was public. So it's one of those things, you know, what seems to be bad is sometimes opens a doorway to something much better. And so that's what this Rainflower Hut is. And the it's similar to like a Karma Kitchen. It's a Karma Kitchen actually in Berkeley where the food is essentially free, and you don't pay for anything, but you are invited to give a donation, and the donation pays it forward. So if you give a donation, then that means for the next person can eat for free. And it's actually going quite well, and it's very similar. So this is a movement, though, in China called Karma Kitchens, and it was started actually by an old monk. He was like in his 70s or 80s, and he just saw that there were so many old people who were basically just like going hungry. You know, they just didn't have food to eat. And so we started a little restaurant, and it's very beautiful. They're very elegant, very nice. They're totally vegan, you know, traditional vegan Chinese temple food. And he volunteered, and he create, you know, cooks the food and puts it out. And it's all run by volunteers. People volunteer. And lo and behold, there are a lot of volunteers who want to help. And so we started one of these restaurants. And old people can just come in and sit down and eat basic vegan healthy food, which, as you know, is very inexpensive. It's just basically rice and some vegetables, beans and things. And they feed everyone gets fed, and it's done always in a very mindful, beautiful way by volunteers. Everything is donated. Nobody makes any money. They never charge you for any food. It's all free for the old people that come. And so anyway, it has just been spreading, you know, it's been spreading all over China. It's become this huge movement, the Rainflower Hut movement, you know, and it just touches that deep part inside everyone, where to care for each other, to help make sure nobody's going hungry, to honor the elderly and make sure they're getting good food, and the whole idea that we don't need anything fancy, just something good and wholesome and simple is what's best. You know, it's really what's best. It's best for everybody. And so I just love seeing these kinds of movements taking off. And I think the more we can get inspired by that, we've seen that in some of these intentional communities also. I was talking about that a few months ago when we were traveling in Europe. Similar things, people just making food and giving it to people. We saw that by the vegan publishing house in Switzerland, for example. So, all right. So those are some of the things I wanted to mention. There's actually quite a few other indications of the vegan movement just booming and growing all the time. We have like George Monbiot's articles in The Guardian in England, really targeting and pointing out that it's livestock population explosion, much more than the human population explosion, that's the real problem. And Casey Kaft, he's a World Peace Type facilitator and publisher, wrote a great article about animal advocacy. I have a link there, so please, you know, if you have a chance to look at that, that would be great. I won't go through all this other stuff, I don't think. But there's a lot of really fascinating developments in the entire vegan world, and just great things happening. I mean, this actually, you know, going down, I'm just looking down here, you know, this massive urban farm to replace urban blight in Detroit, for example, you know, this whole idea of planting vegetables in cities and helping people feed themselves, you know, to really work on that and to understand, you know, Frances Millipay has a new article called Meat Madness, where I was really glad to see that. You know, she really shows the devastating effects of meat on every level of our society. There's a beautiful article by Bob Comus. I think some of you probably know him, but this is an article called "The Pigs Were Glowing Deep Gold," And you know, it's a beautiful article. It talks that it's one of the only articles I've actually seen in the whole animal rights vegan movement that's really overtly spiritual, actually. But it's told in a way that's quite down home and matter of fact. And basically, I'll just say it briefly because I think it's interesting just to listen. You know, Bob Comus is a pig farmer. And he wasn't a pig farmer from birth. He got into it sort of late in life, and he wanted to do pig farming in a way that was really conscious. So he farmed pigs and raised them, and then he never killed them himself, but he would bring them to the slaughter. He would drop them off, and then he would leave without really watching to see what happened to them. He didn't want to, you know, see it. And he was glad that he was able to at least provide people who were going to eat pork and bacon with products that were less violent, I guess, or whatever, and less toxic. And so he did that for quite a few years, and he talks in the article about some of his misgivings about doing it, but all in all, he was pretty much committed to it and felt like it was, you know, his work to do. And then he talks about how one really cold morning, he walked out there with the pigs to give them their feed, and for just a flash, a very brief moment, he was, as his boots sort of crunched on the snow, he got the feed ready, and he looked at the pigs, and suddenly, the pigs were no longer pigs. Suddenly, they were beings. And they were glowing, in his words, glowing deep gold. There was this glowing aura around these pigs. And as he looked at them, he disappeared as a separate self. And his consciousness and the consciousness of the pigs merged as one consciousness. He realized that they were both equally beautiful manifestations of one life, essentially. This direct awakening happened, where he just suddenly saw pigs as not pigs, as beings, as consciousness, manifestations of infinite spiritual consciousness, eternal. And then a few seconds later, it stopped, and the pigs were just pigs again, and he was just a guy again with the feed, and he looked at them, but that was it. That was it. That experience sealed it for him. It was like he never expected it. He just went out there to feed the pigs. It wasn't anything he planned. It was just, but suddenly he just got a glimpse of the true nature of life and saw beyond the spell of illusion to the essential reality underlying the outer appearance, in which there is essentially no fundamentally separate individual. And that glimpse was it. That was it. He knew from that moment on he would not be farming pigs anymore, and very soon he got out of it. That was the end of it. And so now there's this whole documentary about him, which I think should be really interesting, called The Last Pig, I think it's, and it should be a wonderful testimony to his journey, and hopefully will help people to awaken out of this nightmare of stabbing and killing animals by realizing that we're all one life. I mean, because, you know, that was it. You know, when he had that experience, you know, he could no longer justify it. I mean, you don't need any argument. I mean, this is it. When you see it, when you understand it intuitively like he did, that's it. It really does the whole thing. And no one could have forced that experience on him, but at some point when he was ripe and he was ready, then it happened spontaneously. And it touched him, but I think it's going to touch a lot more people. So who knows what is big is big. You know, that little second, that little moment, just him, just standing there for a second, and suddenly his ego got out of the way, and his true eye saw, and he saw beyond the outer forms to the true reality, and that transformed everything. And that's an experience that can happen to anyone at any time, really. We can't make it happen, but we can live our lives in ways that will encourage that to happen, I think. That's what the whole meditative life is about in many ways. And once we have those glimpses, that's enormously inspiring and helps us to really, I think, make deep changes on many levels. So that's a great little article, I think. And anyway, yeah, so there's a number of other excellent articles in here. And so I'll just leave it at that. The final two little images. The first one says, shows a woman, you know, from the 1950s with her proud turkey. I mean, turkey's not proud, but she is. A tortured dead bird with dried bread stuffed into its anal cavity is a symbol of gratitude and abundance. And vegans are the crazy ones. That's done by our good friend John Besky. He's just a brilliant guy in Chicago. He's been creating a lot of great images lately. And then the other image is a million meditating children in Taiwan. I mean, this is really inspiring. Just think of that. And this just happened recently. 1 million children together in one place, all meditating. And we're seeing this happening more and more. We're seeing mass meditations happening. There was a big one of 35,000 people in Mexico City just the other day. And I think, group meditations are a sign of people realizing that we need to get beyond the rhetoric and beyond, all the concepts and things and quiet our minds and connect at the heart with what we truly are and what life is and what all life is. And then from that place, we can move forward and make positive changes. So I wanted to close by talking just a little bit about what happened in the last month for us personally. We were in Flagstaff. The next day, very next morning, we went down to Sedona, and on Friday, which is the third Friday, I guess, of November, and then that evening, we were with some people, Susan Pitcairn, who is a Wilpestein facilitator. Some of you may know of her, at her house in Sedona, and also Silas Rao was there, who a couple of weeks later made this presentation that you can see the video of in Europe with Richard Offenlander for the European Parliament. And he was there in Sedona. Very interesting. He was there in Sedona. He's kind of based in Phoenix, but he was in Sedona as part of a negotiation that he was in with the City Council of Sedona, Arizona, to create a vegan intentional community in Sedona, or just outside the city limits, or I guess within the city limits. And apparently, and one of the city council people was also there at the meeting. At the meeting. I mean, it was a meeting at Susan Pitcairn's house, and I gave a lecture on effective advocacy a little bit, and then we had a conversation. And so this city councilman was there, and Silas Rao was there. And so Silas Rao just talked about how he had been just had a couple of meetings with the city council. And this particular city council member came to my lecture about a year ago in Sedona and then saw Cowspiracy, and he is now a vegan. And so he's very much in favor of this idea of creating a vegan community in Sedona that will be a world pilgrimage site, which will be a world example of living sustainably. So it'll be a sustainable community. And apparently the city has like some large amount of land, like 200 acres of land, which was part of an easement for a water district or something or other, and now they can't use it for that. So they have this land which they need to use for something. I mean, they don't need to, but they can use for something, and so they have actually approved using it to create an intentional vegan, sustainable world pilgrimage site community. So now Silas is in the beginning process of fundraising. But what he was saying is this, it's going to be a need as this goes forward for vegan, visionaries and people who would like to roll up their sleeves and live in a vegan community where they will not only grow their own food and live sustainably in a community on the land in Sedona, but also create a demonstration community where people from around the world can come to learn about vegan living, about veganic gardening, about, you know, a whole way of living as vegans in Sedona. So, I just think, you know, that kind of synchronicity is just amazing, actually. I mean, it's not amazing, but it's the way things happen. But anyway, so we were there the next night to hear about all that and be part of the conversation of creating this community. And there was also a woman there who's in charge of their eco film festival they have every year too, and she helped promote Kostorisi there, and she's a vegan, and she's actually related to the Esselstyn family. She married into the Esselstyn family, so she works. She actually does the yoga for all the Carlo Esselstyn, Rip Esselstyn retreats now, because she married Carlo Esselstyn's nephew or something like that, and is a yoga teacher, and she's a vegan. So there's this tremendous, I think, you know, moving spirituality and veganism and environmentalism and film and arts and creativity and community, you know, not only in Sedona, but just, I think, you know, it's spreading around the country and making an impact, you know, everywhere. So we went to Albuquerque. And we had a wonderful lecture there, and then the next night in Santa Fe. And I want to tell you all a little bit about Santa Fe. I mean, Santa Fe is a place where there's a very strong vegan movement, and Ray, Sikora, and JC, JC's name, anyway, JC, Ray and JC, they are... just doing fantastic work in bringing the vegan message to Santa Fe. And they've actually Jim Corcoran and Ray Sikora are married. They got married at the Summerfest a couple of years ago by Howard Lyman. And they're longtime vegan advocates, and so they are also actually, coincidentally in a sense, working to create a vegan community there. And so if anyone's interested, you know, check it out. They have a Facebook group called Veganville. They want to create Santa Fe as the Veganville, and they've got over 1,000 people, I think, that are on the Facebook group who have expressed some kind of interest. And we went and we had lunch with them after the event, which we had at the Unity Church. And the minister at the Unity Church in Santa Fe, Brendalyn Batchelor, she is also herself a vegan, which is kind of unusual, so it was really great. So a lot of the minister of the Unity in Taos, who lives in Santa Fe also, where we spoke the next night in Taos at the Unity Church, Gary Kowalski is a well-known vegan Unitarian minister and Unitarian writer. He's the author of a number of books, all on animal rights, too. So there's a lot happening in Albuquerque, Santa Fe, and Taos. They're all kind of close to each other. They're those three cities. Taos is also where Keith McHenry lives, and Food Not Bombs is there. But we had lunch with Ray and JC the following day, and it was just great to see not only their beautiful vegan garden, but also their solar oven that they baked the bread in. It was really good bread and just baked beautifully in the sun right on that cold November day. It gets up to like 350, 400 degrees in the oven. it was just very inspiring to see what they're doing there. And then we went on from Santa Fe and Taos. We went across to Wichita. I mean, you don't think of Wichita as being the vegan hub either, but again, there's local activists there, Diane Waltner with the Unitarian Church. The Unitarian minister and his wife are very vegetarian-friendly. And so we had actually Thanksgiving, a vegan Thanksgiving feast there with some other vegans, and then we had meals and gave lectures, and they really had a whole program in Wichita. And Judy Carmen and her husband Michael came down from Lawrence and joined us there for a few days, which was really a wonderful time. We had a huge ice storm, and the whole pickup truck was absolutely cake with about like 3/4 of an inch of ice. I had to pour hot water on the windshield just to be able to. I mean, many containers actually. Quite a thing there, that ice storm. But we managed to get through, get out of there, and on time to get to the next event, which is in Oklahoma City, where they had another. We also had an ice storm, and trees were just broken everywhere from that. That was a really serious ice storm. And again, in Oklahoma City, there was a beautiful vegan gathering there, and community, and we met some wonderful vegan activists that are working hard in Oklahoma City. You know, it's just great to see this happening. And then we went to Little Rock, Arkansas. Little Rock, I mean, I was amazed at Little Rock. I mean, that was a place I thought would be nothing, but there's a lot, it was a lot of doctors, a lot of MDs that are vegans in Little Rock. I guess the Neil Barnard and PCRM has taken off and they're talking to each other, and we stayed, we stayed in our RV, but we stayed basically under the auspices of a woman who's a vegan MD, and it was great. I mean, we met a lot of very dedicated people in Little Rock bringing the vegan message there through both health as well as the ethics side, and also the conspiracy and environmental side as well. Memphis, Tennessee was next. Same, basically, I won't bore you all with it, but we saw just very inspiring turnouts of people there in Huntsville, Birmingham, and then the final main event we did was in Mobile, Alabama, and that was, in a way, the biggest and best one in a lot of ways. They were all great, really, but we had a big turnout in Mobile, and it was kind of on short notice, too. There's a woman there who's has a yoga studio, and he just really mobilized a great turnout in Mobile. You would never think Mobile, Alabama, but it's actually a beautiful city, beautiful old homes, and quite a lot of very conscious, artistic, creative people living there, and the vegan movement is going great there, too. So that's our tour. We had a chance to spend a few days at the state park in Manatee Springs, and now here with my mother. And I kind of wanted to close with this idea. I know it's really time to end here, but you know, it's very interesting for me to come here and be staying for a few days with my mother. She's a retired missionary, and she's staying in a monastery with retired missionaries. Most of them are from Africa. They live their entire adult lives in Africa. Most of them are missionaries, bringing the sort of fundamentalist Christian message to people in Africa. And so their African Inland Mission is what it's called, and they have a this one place. It's a retirement center. So it's, you know, I don't know, it's probably maybe 50 acres of land. It's quite a lot of land. And they have houses. They have 80 people living here, and they're all in duplexes. So two people, or either two individuals or two couples or some combination of that, live, and they're mostly retired, and they're, you know, it's just, to me, it's this beautiful example of a community based on shared principle. I don't obviously agree personally with everything they believe as far as being a fundamentalist Christian, but the idea, the bigger idea is that, you know, I see this, I think, why couldn't we do something like this as deacons? You know, they have this land. We talked about it. My mother, you know, it's only like $250 a month, and that's it. She can live here. You know, it's very inexpensive. You have 80 people spending $250 a month, roughly, or $300 a month, something like that. That works out to about $250,000 every month is being generated. That's plenty. I mean, that's $3 million a year to own, to pay the taxes, to pay off all mortgages for building 40 homes, and you know, it's not an environmentally conscious place at all, but it certainly could be. I mean, to build it, we could have community gardens and have solar panels and have you know, recycling, and have just a beautiful, incredibly beautiful community that was all vegan and sustainable, built on the same principles as this. I mean, what's stopping it? I mean, they're doing it, you know, but, I mean, there's these Christian retirement communities everywhere. I mean, there's thousands of them all over the place, you know, and there's not one vegan community in the entire country. I think, you know, why we should be able to do the same thing. You know, just have a piece of land, have people live cooperatively. It seems to be no problems. They don't seem to have any politics or anything. They just live together, and work together, and they all go to the same movies. They all get together for prayers. They're all kind of on the same wavelength. And I don't know if vegans could be as harmonious together. I think we should be able to be. I mean, we have to have a spiritual practice. That's what really holds people together, is this common spiritual practice. If it's only veganism, it's probably not going to hold people together. I mean, that is a spiritual practice, but if people don't take it as a spiritual practice, I think maybe there'd be a lot to fight about. So, looking at this community, I think what really the glue that binds the people is their commitment to a shared philosophy, bringing that to the world. But I think as vegans, we have something, we're not necessarily proselytizing, in the same way at all, but there is a sense of living our lives in a way that we're blessing the world and we're helping others. And so I just think it would be great to see ways of creating more vegan communities, actually where people can actually live. So if anyone has any thoughts about that, it would be great. But I think right now we're out of time to go and see more into it. Those are seeds that we can plant in our collective consciousness here together. Feel free to stay in touch with me personally, or to stay in touch together. We have the World Peace Diet Facilitator Facebook group, which is a great place to connect. We have the World Peace Diet Facebook group. We have the World Peace Diet Facilitator Facebook group and the World Peace Diet Facebook group. And then we have the Circle of Compassion Facebook group, which is the prayer circle for animals. So we have some Facebook groups which are good places to dialogue, I think. And if anyone else has any ideas, we have our Veg Inspiration for the Day. Many thanks to Tara for helping to keep that, and also to Grace Raley for helping so much with that. And we have coming up right now, in a couple of days, we're flying off to Dubai, where we will be there for 10 days, and we have some events scheduled there to help bring the vegan message to the United Arab Emirates and that part of the world, right on the Persian Gulf. And then we'll be flying from there to South Africa, and I'm just delighted. I'm just so happy that we can go and see Andy and Sven in South Africa, and also these other wonderful people, Rohan. Rohan came and visited us in Cincinnati a few years ago and took the World Peace Diet Facilitator there at Mark Stroud and Anna's Jubilee, where we were giving the World Peace Diet Facilitator training every year for about 5 years. And Rohan came all the way from South Africa, and he has since written a book, a wonderful book, on the health benefits of vegan living. And a woman named Nikki, and so we're putting on a World Peace Diet Facilitator training type retreat there the first weekend in January, and then a few days later we're going to be going to Cape Town, and some wonderful people there, Don and Ian, along with Andy and Sven. We're going to be doing another public talk and workshop there in Cape Town, and then another lecture in Durban, and then another lecture in Johannesburg, also going on a safari to see some animals near Kruger at a different place called Timbavati, which we've heard is a really beautiful place to see animals and in the wild without disturbing them, of course. And so then we'll be coming back, and we have a whole lecture tour here in Florida for a couple of months, going up to Ireland. I'll be working actually with Sandra Higgins in Ireland, speaking there, and also in Amsterdam for the Veg Fest in Amsterdam, and also in Brighton for the Veg Fest in Brighton, England. That's at the end of February, and then the end of March, going to Seattle and speaking at a social justice conference there. And then we'll be working our way north. So wherever you live, let us know. We'd be happy to do a World Peace Diet lecture, or ask thinking about it. Maybe a facilitator training would be nice to do in somewhere, North Carolina, Virginia, or Pennsylvania, or maybe New England somewhere. We'll be probably in New England over the summer, and then heading west and back to California. So we'll have a couple of months to head west. So if you live in the Midwest or the Great Plains or Rocky Mountains or wherever, let us know if we can work together. That would be great. All right, everyone. Well, much love to you all. I'm sorry we didn't really hear from any individuals, but we sure had a lot. It was great to be able to hear some ideas from Madeline and from Mark Stroud. And I'm just so grateful to all of you for the efforts that you're making on behalf of animals and our beautiful planet, from the deeper understanding of our interconnectedness, that we're all in a process of ripening. We cannot force another to ripen, but we all can deepen our own ripening process. And I think as we do that, we, as Walt Whitman said, we no longer convinced by arguments, we convinced by our presence. And I think that's really an exciting way to live our lives, as Gandhi said, to be the change we'd like to see in the world. So I will do my best to get the recording of this up soon. And you can listen to it if you miss parts of it, and tell your friends if they want to listen. It's really, you know, I like getting the word out there as best we can. A big thank you to Tara for all your help, Tara, with everything while we're away. And a big thank you, of course, to everyone else who's helping out in so many different ways. And to Lily for the World Peace Diet Circle. It seems to be happening. It is happening every single Sunday. I think you all know about the World Peace Diet Circle, so I won't belabor that, but it's a wonderful group. They're still just finishing up now. I think just one or maybe two more weeks, and then there'll be a break until February 14th. So highly recommend every single Sunday, just at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You can find out about the number. You just go to worldpeacedite.com and click on upcoming events. It's right at the very top of our schedule. You can always see our tour schedule there at worldpeacedite.com. And if you have any suggestions or questions or ideas, never hesitate to be in touch. And so I'm going to close it out here. Much love to you all from all of, from Madeline and me. And together we are, hopefully I can say this, we are helping to build the field of consciousness for a world of peace for all living beings. Much love. Enjoy the month that we have to get, somewhat separately until January. And then we'll be arriving back in this country on January 15th. And then our next meeting will be on the 21st. The third Thursday of January is January 21st, and we'll be in 2016. So I apologize if anything I have said has offended anyone. I also apologize if I've forgotten anything. But we do the best we can, and send our love, and just know that we are part of the awakening of humanity to live our lives in harmony with the beautiful geese, the ducks, the pigs, the deer, each other, the ecosystems, and the galaxies. And that we can sing our song and dance our dance for the benefit of all living beings. Enjoy this month. Much love to you all.